Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to the best of Connecting Faith. This previously aired program highlights some of our most compelling conversations at noon on Faith Radio. And now your host, Neil Stavem.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you tuned in. Looking forward to a great hour ahead today as we talk about broken China. No, that's not actually not what we're talking about, Ryan. Have you ever experienced that? Broken mom's China?
I remember at a young age. I can see it in my mind, the specific cool dish, dropping it, seeing it fall to the floor, break apart.
Okay. We're going to talk about the beauty of broken. There's no such thing as a perfect family. Of course, it's not about China, but it's a good illustration. We're going to get to that. A guest who I've wanted to talk to for some time and have so appreciated her ministry over the years, and looking forward to sharing the story with you next, from Elisa Morgan. For many years, Elisa Morgan was the director of MOPS International and had a wonderful little radio show we used to play all the time, and I always enjoyed her speaking whenever I'd have an opportunity to hear. She was named by Christianity Today as one of the top 50 women influencing today's church and culture, and one of today's most sought-after authors, speakers, and leaders, and authored over 15 books on mothering, spiritual formation, and evangelism, and led as CEO of MOPS International for a number of years, and over that course of time, it grew into thousands of groups across the U.S. and other countries, and she has written a completely different book. Her latest, because it's called The Beauty of Broken, and there's no such thing as a perfect family, and she's here to tell us her story, and we're just so looking forward to hearing a little bit more about her and how God has helped her see the beauty in the broken. Elisa, maybe let's start with MOPS. You were head of an organization that was all about encouraging mothers. In the meanwhile, your life was kind of it wasn't the perfect family. Did you ever feel, you know, maybe I'm not really qualified to be leading MOPS?
Oh my goodness, I came into it feeling that way. Okay. Right, yes. I was 34 years old when I was recruited to apply to become the first president, and my children were 3 years old and 5 years old, and MOPS is a grassroots organization, so it had been around for 15 years prior, led by courageous and faithful volunteer women who just gave their heart and soul to the ministry. But the board determined it was time to provide more formal leadership. And during that season, my husband and I had adopted our children. We knew biologically that we weren't going to be able to have children, so we adopted our children. But even back further, I myself come from a broken family. My dad called me into his office when I was like 5 and told me that he had decided he didn't love my mother anymore and that they were getting a divorce, and I felt like my family fell and broke then. And then as I grew older, I realized that my mom, a single mom, struggled with alcohol, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, it's like my family fell and broke again. So when I became a Christian and gave my life to God, I felt like, well, now I have a shot at producing a whole family, a family maybe immune from breakage. And Evan and I got married, and we waited to adopt our children, and it was an amazing time. And really, I was scared to death to become the first president of MOPS because I felt like I had come from a mess. And even though I had had gobs of counseling, you know, I still was very aware of my inadequacies. And I can remember one day in the grocery store just looking around, praying, God, show me, do you really want me to say yes to this opportunity? And he really encouraged me and said, Elisa, just bring your deficits and I'll make them your offering. And so really my platform in beginning at MOPS was, I don't know what I'm doing. You don't know what you're doing. let's lean into God together, moms, and be the best moms we can be. Isn't it stunning that God gives children to people who've never been parents every time?
That's true.
Yeah. So anyway, we started in that way. And so, yeah, I felt completely unqualified. And then as my children grew up and struggled with some issues, which I know we're going to talk about, I felt, yes, maybe I was going to be disqualified, not adequate enough.
In the story, powerfully written, called The Beauty of Broken, you talk a little bit about this sort of mothering instinct, I guess, that you had. I mean, that's probably a God-given natural instinct, but was it more, do you think, a reaction to the maybe lack of stability in your own home, that you wanted to kind of control the situations? Because, you know, as you read the story, it feels like there's an awful lot that's out of control.
It was a lot of out of control, not out of God's control, but out of my control. And you know, we as parents really do believe that if, in the formulas, that if we have family meetings and times with Jesus and are involved with church and love our spouse, that, you know, everything's going to go fine and dandy and we're going to be able to produce a really healthy, happy family. The reality is, I heard this saying and I love it, is that the opposite of faith is not doubt, it's control. And the reality is we can't control our families. We can't control our children. We can't control our children's choices. We're called to shape them and guide them and build into them. But in the end, all we can really control is our responses to their choices.
Take a few minutes to just sort of tell how the choices were so difficult, and not only for your kids, but for you and extended family as well.
Yeah, when my daughter was around 16, I had a dream one night that I was walking through a home that was under construction. Jesus was the tour guide, and he stopped at a doorway to a bedroom, and he said, "Oh, this is the room where your daughter's going to live." And then he pointed to the room adjacent. He said, "And this is for the baby." I said, "Well, she's not pregnant. She's 16. And I woke up. And the dream repeated itself the next night, no kidding. Really threw me, but I shook it off like a lot of moms would. But just about a week later, I was sitting in a meeting in the office at MOPS International, and we were talking about the whole concept of teen MOPS for moms who are themselves teenagers. And I felt God whisper to me saying, "Alisa, you're going to know more about this than anyone in this room." And I went, "Oh, my gosh." So I went home and I asked my beautiful, strong, talented daughter if there was any reason she could be pregnant. And she nodded. And indeed, she was. And it felt like my second family then fell and broke. And during this kind of knock-me-off-my-feet season, it wasn't just my daughter who began to struggle. My son did, too. And maybe it was in response to her choices. He was a little bit younger than her. I don't know, whoever really knows, but he began to veer off the road himself into issues with substance abuse and eventually pot and alcohol and really losing himself in those products. And so, obviously, really hard times. In the book, I talk so much about much, much more that happened. That wasn't my daughter's only pregnancy before she was married. There was another one. And then my son struggled in various recovery programs, even to the point of being homeless for a long season. And there were issues with money. There were issues with truancy. There were legal issues. There were issues of, as I said, adoption and on and on issues. And honestly, it's easy to go, and this was my tendency to go, look, my mom and dad messed up, and my kids seem to be messing up, and I'm like the perfect little peanut butter in the sandwich here. I thought I was doing it right. And in that season, God began to very gently but lovingly show me that while, you know, I was dotting my I's and crossing my T's spiritually, I was judging everybody around me and my family even as that I was better and I was obedient. Why did I get this kind of a result for my efforts when I really was proud? And there was a season of breaking even in me in that season of realizing that I wasn't any less sinful than anybody else.
But that's such a hard journey to take, isn't it? I mean,
it was horrible. I can remember coming in from my 95th counseling appointment and grabbing my blanket, my big comforter, and just getting into the fetal position and just begging God to make this all go away. And it was in those days that he led me to Luke chapter 7, the story of the sinful woman. Don't you love that? Wouldn't you love to be known as that? But anyway, just and her whole interaction with Jesus, where she was anointing him and kissing his feet, and Simon the Pharisee got so incensed. And Jesus very clearly points out that the one who's able to love the most is the one who's been forgiven the most. Therefore, the biggest sinner is the one who's able to love the most. And I realized I had set myself as kind of being above being sinful. And if I kept myself there, I was never going to be able to love. I was going to never be able to be free. I think it's Brennan Manning who said, so many of us pretend like we're sinful, and so we can only pretend like we're forgiven. And when that's the case, how much we miss of the love and the grace that God wants to give us. It's all up to us in that kind of a formula. And that's exhausting and disappointing, and it breaks us.
Talking about the beauty of broken, it's the story of Lisa Morgan. It's told frankly and honestly, but so powerfully as we deal with the issues of forgiveness and God's tender love and faithfulness and the encouragement of others, and you'll find encouragement there too. We're going to talk a little bit about, ask Elisa for some advice, and maybe for those that are in, feel like they're in similar circumstances, and it sort of feels like it's piling on. How much more, Lord? We'll get to that and more in just a moment.
Stay tuned. More of the best of Connecting Faith in just moments.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey.
It makes a difference in my life in that it's so encouraging and inspiring. During my drive time, I appreciate it too, and my errands that I'm running and things that I'm doing. It's a real blessing because it's encouraging and inspiring throughout the entire day, each day.
Connecting your faith to your life every day. Thanks for growing with us on Faith Radio.
My dad's in prison, and I haven't seen him in a long time.
Mine too, and at Christmas, I miss him most.
Christmas is tough when your mom or dad is in prison, but for just $73.50, you can help send a gift and the gospel to six Angel Tree kids. Call 1-855-59-ANGEL. To say thank you, we'll send you an Angel Tree ornament for your tree and the inspirational hardcover book, Hope. That's 1-855-59-ANGEL.
Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
We're talking about the beauty of broken, and my story and likely yours too. That's the title of a new book from Elisa Morgan. She's got degrees from seminaries. She led MOPS International for some 20 years, written some 15 books or so, worked on the NIV Mom's Devotional Bible, so all these good things, sought-after speaker and an author, and yet in the midst of it all, her family is being broken and seemingly broken again and again, and we've sort of just touched on the story coming out of a broken home and then having a daughter with unexpected teen pregnancy, a son that got involved in substance abuse. Do you have any advice for handling the sort of the piling on effect? I mean, it's just, the books read sort of like Job, you know, while they were still speaking, another one comes in and says, well, here's more. How do we deal with the piling on?
It did. Oh, you know, sometimes Evan and I, my husband and I, would just wince and look heavenward. You just, what is next? In fact, honestly, we probably have a little PTSD going on. It's like when the phone rings, it's like, ugh. Or when we talk, you know, to a child, it's like, what's going to happen? Somebody said that Mother Teresa said this, that God won't give us more than we can handle. And then the whole response is, I wish you didn't think so highly of me. I love that line. It's a little black humor is a lovely comfort. But truly, you know, you just want to go to bed. You know, bottom line, you just want to check out. And I think to find a place to be honest and to understand that God can handle our fears, our disappointments, our endings, he can handle that. And you know, there is, somebody was talking to me in a process here about the other side of brokenness. I like that kind of a concept. It doesn't mean you get done with it, but there is a way in which bit after bit, tug of war after tug of war, my husband and I both have come to a place where we gave in, we relinquished, we gave over. Now, do we still pick it up and run to see if we can quickly get into the end zone? Yeah, of course we do. But, you know, we drop it back down again, as God reminds us. And I remember specifically two sections of Scripture, and maybe this will help those who are listening. It's Luke, I think it's chapter 7 and chapter 9. It's a story of two sons, one to a mom and one to a dad. One was possessed by demons. The other was dead. And both of them were just struck to the point of just torturous grief and encountered Jesus. And his words were basically, bring him to me. And each parent did. And in each situation, Jesus restored them. And I just kept thinking about that command of Jesus with my children, specifically for me with my son, bring him to me. And it's become a prayer that whenever I feel myself stepping over again into what is not mine, worrying about my grown son who's now 27 years old, I feel God again saying to me, bring him to me. And I have to bring him to Jesus every day. A lot of this is the healthy work that you do in Al-Anon, you know, when you're working with an addict. A lot of it is understanding, this is the work God's called me to do for my whole life. I cannot do my son's work. I can't do it. One time I was sitting in church and I was looking at a little toddler was sitting next to me and I didn't know where my son was. And I was looking at this little child's feet and I just thought how tiny those little shoes were. And I thought, oh my goodness, I keep trying to put myself into my son's shoes and walk where he's supposed to walk. And Jesus just said, you can't do it. Your feet don't fit in his shoes. And he reminded me of the story of Nathaniel and how before Jesus called him, that Jesus knew exactly where he was. He saw him under a tree before he'd even met him. And it's like Jesus knew exactly where my son was when I didn't. So those are some of the comforts that God has brought me to. And I want to stress, it's not like you sit down and boom, here's your 15 answers, you know, written on 12 pieces of paper and just go out and do them. This is, oh, such a process of doing our work with God and with our loved ones, and each day getting up and going at it again, just believing and relinquishing and believing and relinquishing.
You know, all parents, I mean, it's all of us face loss of various kinds, but certainly, I mean, you're in, as a mom, you're facing loss kind of on multiple levels. I mean, literally sort of the loss of, you don't know where he is, your son, you know, there's hopes, there's dreams, there's all these things that you wanted for your family to be, quote unquote, perfect. I mean, did that it discourage you from even maybe believing or dreaming?
Absolutely. There's one piece I wrote in the book. In the book, there are essays that go after each chapter, and each chapter unpacks what I call broken family values. Those characteristics that hold us to God and hold us to each other when life breaks. But then there are these essays, these breakthroughs they're called, and one of them is called, If I Knew Then What I Know Now. And I asked the very painful question that feels like an utter betrayal for a mother, would I have had kids if I knew then what I know now? And because it is so disappointing, and that feels like an incredible betrayal to say that. But to watch your kids, whom you've built into and loved crazily, choose against you, choose against God, choose against themselves and their own health, is heartbreaking. And I held myself back from admitting that for so many years because it felt like some kind of crazy rejection of them, until I began to understand that it's an honest confession. And it's also probably a necessary confession as I lay down what my dreams were for them and relinquish those to what God is going to redeem in them and through them. Redemption is the concept of understanding how God already sees us in Jesus. And when we look at our children and we think, you know, I just see mess, 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 but Jesus sees who he made them to be, then I kind of want his dream for them, what he can bring out of their broken choices. And while it's, yes, disappointing, there is something beautiful to pick up and imagine that I never understood was possible. And I hope that doesn't sound like cotton candy and rainbows, because I don't mean it that way. I mean, everybody wants your child to walk down the aisle in a pretty white dress and marry a godly human being and have happy, healthy babies, of course. So when your child has a baby before they walk down the aisle, and when maybe they have a baby that dies, and you have a grandchild that dies, or they have a baby that they relinquish, and you have a grandchild that you relinquish. You know, those are not things any parent wants to endure. And yet now I know I have this precious grandchild that I got to hold, who's now in heaven, and he's holding my heart there in a unique way. And now I have a live grandchild that came early into my life that I would never give up. You know, it's just our dreams change, and our dreams are formed more yieldedly by God's redemptive power than our best wishes.
Alisa Morgan is my guest today. We're talking about her book, The Beauty of Broken, subtitled My Story and Likely Yours Too. Now, I'm going to take a quick call here before the bottom of the hour break. Patricia, we've got a couple minutes. You're on with Alisa Morgan. Go ahead with your call.
Hi, Lisa. I appreciate your honesty and your transparency. It's really helping me since I've just sat here and listened just briefly. I am coming back into a separation of marriage and just wanting to know how to address the forgiveness and keep the forgiveness of God flowing. Coming from a broken background, broken family myself of divorce and my husband also, both of our homes, mothers and fathers, just a lot of brokenness, a lot of dysfunctionalness. So, yeah.
Oh, Patricia, my heart goes out to you. And it's hard to talk about this. You know, it is, Patricia. And thank you, because you just encouraged me with how you opened. And I mean, I'm sitting here going, oh, my gosh, I feel like I'm going to start sobbing. Why? What's going on with me? And we all have to just keep processing our stuff. So anyway, thank you for that. Marriage is so hard, and it's so beautiful, and it's so rich. And I think you hit the nail on the head with forgiveness. You know, all we can do is be responsible for how well we love someone. We can't be responsible for how well someone loves us. We can work on being lovable. And, you know, I didn't realize how many barriers I had put up in my own marriage until like 20 years down the road. For my situation, in fact, in even writing the chapter I wrote on my husband, the book taught me. I had no idea what I had been doing. For me, I had assumed that because I was the mom, I had to be uber in control of my children. And so when they started derailing, I thought it was up to me to get them back on track. And I really pushed my husband out of the mix. I thought he doesn't really know what he's doing like I do. And so, because I'm the mom, and so I need to do this. And, you know, he was pretty smart. And in a way, he's like, wow, you got it. Go. I'll go watch golf. I mean, he was like, super, you got it. That's awesome. But I didn't realize that the help that he wanted to give me, I was pushing away. And I didn't realize it for 20 years. And that he had so much to offer in the relationship. He's needed to forgive me. I've needed to forgive him. And I think that's the currency where love can grow anew. It's like the soil where the future grows.
We're going to talk more about that, about the soil where love grows, from Elisa Morgan's powerful story, The Beauty of Broken. Elisa Morgan was for many years the CEO of MOPS International, and she's kind enough to join us today. And we'll continue in just a moment.
Stay tuned. More of the best of Connecting Faith in just moments. Of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
32 past the hour, talking today with Elisa Morgan about her story, her honest story of life, the not perfect family. The Beauty of Broken is the title of the book, and on the picture, the front cover is a plate with the shattered pieces glued together, which is, as the subtitle suggests, my story and likely yours, Elisa Morgan. A well-known speaker, author, leader, author of a number of books, and for 20 years served as CEO of MOPS International. In fact, I want to ask her in a moment about keeping your heart tender in the midst of hardships and trials, as she's been sharing. Let's take a quick call from Nate, who was kind enough to call in from Fergus Falls. Nate, you're on with Elisa Morgan. Go ahead.
Hey, Nate.
Yeah, I was just appreciating the reality that the old line, the family that prays together, stays together. That's a bogus turn of events. We want to encourage people to pray, but I've discovered that the family that prays together. That's really it.
Awesome. That's awesome. What a great comment. I really appreciate that, Nate. Yeah, we have so bought into a mythology that there's such a thing as a perfect family, and that if we follow a prescriptive formula of being obedient, really good boys and girls and moms and dads, that we're going to end up with a happy Christmas picture and a great Christmas letter where even Hunter the dog is obedient. You know, we totally have swallowed this. And you know, God really does love families, and he loves, quote, happy families, but he really loves people who are conformed to the image of Christ, and that doesn't happen happily most of the time.
Well, and it doesn't always, there are many prodigals that take a long time coming back, if at all. So, and it's not like it's just a season always either.
That's right. I mean, we have such huge shocks in our parenting years. And I don't want to scare people who are listening where things are going great in their family. That's awesome. It's awesome. There are millions of kids out there and parents out there and families out there who are intact and are growing and love each other and are committed to Jesus. But there are more than millions that have holes in them and have broken pieces. And we feel such shame about that, as if it was all our fault. And we sweep our pieces into the closet and think we're so alone. And so the purpose of this book and my story is to bring it out and to share the pain and to see how God is still involved and how much he loves the broken and how present he is with us.
So how do you keep your heart tender in the midst of multiple hardships and trials? I mean, it's been one thing after another in many ways.
It has been. I've had terrific friends who've sat by me. The board of MOPS International was my covering throughout the ordeal. My pastor has supported my husband and I through this season. I was a person who was called to lead while I was suffering this way, and I was suffering deeply, and most people didn't know it except for the people I just have mentioned. And, you know, many times I wanted to just resign, and I remember actually the chair of the board saying, why would we want you to resign, Elisa, because now you're even more equipped to minister to our audience. And I was like, really? No. And so how do you keep your heart tender? I think you lean into the pulverizing. You know, you bend down to the brokenness. Let me tell you a story of one thing that happened. My grandson, who was living with us for a season, had just gone down for a nap. His mom was at work, and I was wasted, you know, and so I laid down for just a rest. And it was a really old word, but I gave into it because it fit. And just as I was ready to fall off to sleep, I heard this huge eruption. It was like this crash. And I couldn't actually tell if it was inside or outside of our house, but I got up and I started walking around the house looking for what might have happened. Everything was like, okay in the entryway. It was okay in the dining room. Oh, no, not in the dining room. And I noticed immediately, how could you miss it? This three-shelf unit that had hung on the wall in my dining room and contained my grandmother's entire antique china collection had lost its grip on the wall and had fallen off, and everything was shattered and just smattered and just messed. And I bent down to just lift the corner of it to see if anything was saved, and everything was broken, everything, all these hand-painted relics that she had brought back from her little old lady tour buses in Europe and bubble wrapped and brought to me. And it was the one item, this collection, that I wanted when she passed. And I just thought, oh my word, it's all broken. And, you know, this was my legacy from her. And in that moment, I thought that I'm beyond help, just like this mess is beyond help. And I felt in that moment that God just tenderly bent down and put his arm around me and said, I see you here. And it's like I began to pick up the shards. And this is the truth, is that I had to get the broom and the dustpan and sweep them all in and walk them over to the trash, because I couldn't do anything to fix it. But in the years that came, I watched God rebuild me, take the broken pieces of me and repurpose them into something that was honestly different. Yes, I don't fit back together exactly the same, but better. A better version of me, a more yielded version. And, you know, so I walk around my life like those broken plates glued back together, and I can feel the cracks in me. And that keeps my heart tender. And it's not, oh my gosh, depressed tender. It's a yielding, an understanding of my brokenness. And therefore, when I see someone else who's broken, instead of getting uncomfortable, I feel a huge compassion and a familiarity with the brokenness. There have been people in our lives, different things happening in their kids' lives. And one couple in particular, Evan and I ran into not long ago, were just grieving over their child's choice of a spouse in an upcoming union, and just grieving because this young person has lots of baggage and lots of broken places. And I would be concerned. I understand. But I thought, and my husband actually said it, this is their work. This is their journey. They need to go through this themselves. We can comfort them, but they need to walk through the reality that there's no such thing as a perfect spouse for their child, and that whoever their child picks, they're going to be broken pieces. And that keeps me tender, to hold those broken pieces and realize that life, and this is where Jesus bends in to be with us.
You've been writing, of course, for years. Did the journaling sort of help you kind of make sense of the circumstances, help in some way?
It did. In fact, I went through all my journals in preparing for this book, and I was so glad because, you know, when we write things back down, we can look back and see more clearly what God's done, verses that he had given to me in certain seasons, notes I saved. I remember stacks of notes even from my daughter during the season when she was pregnant. And one I quote directly in the book, of she just writes, I'm so sorry, Mom. I know this isn't what you wanted for me. And I, you know, you read those words, you know, years later, and I can have a perspective that I couldn't have in that moment. So, yeah, I'd really encourage people to keep the notes, to keep the files, to keep the journal, to keep the verses where God does speak.
You had a friend who would apparently frequently remind you, have you, you know, given thanks in this circumstance? Talk
yeah,
about
I didn't
the...
like him very well. Yeah,
well, I was going to say that you used the friend in air quotes, I guess, maybe. But
well,
of course, we know it's true. But so was there a kind of a progression of emotions that finally led to thankfulness? Because I'm sure that there were moments where it's like, you know, a raised fist was more what you were thinking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This friend was actually at that time my boss. He was the chair of the board of MOPS International, and it was right in the thick of so many issues. My daughter had had two pregnancies. One pregnancy. It was before she was pregnant the second time. She'd been in an accident that was just incredibly tragic. My son was away from home in a recovery program. It was Thanksgiving, and there was a blizzard. And this godly man calls to check in on me and ask the question if he thanked God in this yet. And he recited from 1 Thessalonians 5:18, thank God in every circumstance, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus. And, you know, I really wanted to throw the phone through the window. And actually, I sank down on the carpet and put my face there while I kept the phone to my ear. And if it had been anyone else but my boss, I probably would have just excused myself and waved my to-do list and said, got to run. But it wasn't. It was him. And I told him I would try to. And in the next couple of days, as I got ready for this Thanksgiving meal where there were fewer people at the table than there should be, what ended up happening is that God led me to think about all the things I wasn't thankful for and to invite him into them. So I called them my no-thanks moments and to try and give thanks for them and think about it. You know, like, so I start off with my son, no thanks, God. He's not here at the Thanksgiving table. But when I try to give thanks to God, I realized, oh, thank you that he's safe. Thank you that he's in a season of recovery. And wow. And then, no thanks, God, I'm not happy that my daughter was in this accident and sits in this clavicle device. Oh, wait, let me give thanks. Okay, then thank you, she's alive. And when we go through these no thanks moments and try to thank God in them, I discovered he was in them. That there was still something there to be thankful for. And that's another thing that just has led me through. It's been a decade since then, led me through to today. There are a lot of no thanks moments, like, you know, the ones I'm talking about with friends that are now on their journey. And I don't like seeing them hurt, and I don't like how their hurt hurts me. But I'm learning to give thanks in that because God's in it. And when I thank him in that, I see him in it. It changes me. The Thanksgiving changes me.
Lisa, did you ever, during this season, you're leading a major ministry, you're traveling around the country speaking, you're writing. Was there a sense that, you know, maybe this is a spiritual oppression and, you know, there's sort of various viewpoints about how active the enemy is in our life, but did you think about that?
Yeah, I did, and I appreciate you asking that. I remember walking down the hall one late afternoon at MOPS when most people had gone home and I was packing up, and I was so overwhelmed and so exhausted. And I want to be clear, I wasn't hiding during these years. I was discerning. I was carefully sharing what I could and entrusting to God and the leadership of MOPS what I couldn't share. But I was exhausted from that ordeal. And I remember just shooting an arrow prayer up to God saying, if I quit, would the enemy leave my children alone? And I felt like he said immediately, no, no, because that's who he is. And that's what he wants. And it was sobering to think of that. And again, after in that season is when I did ask the chair of the board, should I just step down? And the response was, no, you're actually more qualified now than ever. You know, you have one more mother of preschooler. She just lives under your roof with you. And I, you know, I had to hold on to that. And, you know, I'm not a big look for Satan under every bush kind of a person, but I totally believe in the presence and reality of evil. And in its desires to turn us away from the source of hope and grace and love that God longs for us to have in a relationship with Jesus. And so I would then turn my eyes, turn my focus, turn my direction toward Jesus, away from evil. Where are you in this? Help me in this. Rather than, oh my gosh, he's going to get me again. You know, it's a discipline. It's hard, and it's really hard to believe, but every time we turn to God, eventually, there may be seasons of silence, but I've learned he's even in the silences, that we will see him. We will find him present.
Probably not the best strategy for a growth strategy for MOPS, though, I suppose, to just keep bringing them into your home, but it did work at one point anyway, I guess. Didn't it? We're talking with Elisa Morgan about her powerful story, The Beauty of Broken. Subtitle is My Story and Likely Yours Too. And we've got a couple of comments to get to this next segment here. More in a moment.
Thanks for joining us for the Best of Connecting Faith. More in just a moment.
You know, we receive many thank yous throughout the year. Notes from listeners whose lives have been changed by, well, the messages of timeless truth from relevant Bible preachers and family-focused teachers. But those expressions of thanksgiving also belong to everyone who helps keep Faith Radio on the air. If you're not already a member of the monthly support team that keeps Faith Radio on the air, would you consider joining this Thanksgiving season? You can give simply and safely online at myfaithradio.com. Thank you.
If you wanted to encourage someone far away a couple hundred years ago, you might have to work pretty hard.
But thankfully, it's 2013, and real encouragement is now just a cell phone or computer screen away when you join My Faith Radio on Twitter.
It's your 24/7, 365 dose of the very latest in connecting your faith to your life. Find wisdom, insight, and be reminded that you're not alone.
Connect with Faith Radio on Twitter. Just look for My Faith Radio on Twitter.com.
Friend of sinners, open our eyes to the world at the end of our pointing fingers. Let our hearts be led by mercy. Help us reach with open hearts and open doors.
Oh, welcome back to an encore presentation, sinners, the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired program.
We're talking the beauty of broken with Alisa Morgan today. So one of the top Christian leaders, speakers in our nation today, and has written a number of books under her leadership as CEO of MOPS International Group, from 350 to 4,000 groups. And she is serving in a new role now. We'll talk about that in a moment. I've got a couple of questions, though. One of our listeners wants to know, talk to the person who tends to carry other people's burdens too often. How can we empathize without becoming unhealthy?
Wonderful question. Yeah, empathy is to step into someone's shoes and experience what they are going through. And empathy is an amazing gift, you know. People who are hurting want to be with other people who are hurting. You know, that's just reality. But to step too far in carrying one another's burdens to where we leave our own understanding of our own personhood and our own responsibilities is really to cause a kind of a soul split. We're not to carry other people's burdens to the point that we don't pay attention to our own. You know, that's really a dangerous thing. And it's a great dance that happens with addicts, with those who are hurt, is that we think we're helping when we do their work for them. But when we do their work for them, they don't have to do their work. Even when we feel their feelings for them, they don't have to feel their feelings. So, you know, some of the greatest tricks that an addict can play is to make you mad, because then they don't have to feel mad at themselves, and to make you worry, because then they don't have to be responsible for themselves. It's stunning how this works. So watch out. If you're feeling overwhelmed, burdened down, anxious, worried, angry, you're probably carrying someone else's work as your own.
Good word. Freddie in St. Paul says, how can I encourage a friend of mine with a grown son? She feels so guilty because of the mistakes she made in raising him, and she can't seem to let go and develop a healthy relationship with him.
Oof. I remember my mom on her deathbed really stayed alive until my sister got there, and it was pretty much for that reason. She wanted to tell her that she loved her. She felt guilty always about that situation. A very wise person pointed out to my husband and I, he was a counselor, he said there are three ingredients in raising children. There's heredity, which we have very little control over, you know, it's just genes and DNA. Second one is environment. Okay, we can control that, and we can make some good choices and some poor choices to some extent. But the third one is free will. We have no control over that. So I would say to this mother that her adult child has choices to make as well. How many times our children push against us as parents because they're trying to separate and they're trying to grow up and they're trying to find their way. And the goal of separation is that they quit pushing against us and start choosing for themselves. when they round that corner, they often can come back to us. But again, we're not responsible for their work. If she feels she needs to ask for forgiveness, do so. Receive God's. Ask for forgiveness from her child. And then apply it and forgive herself and apply that forgiveness day to day.
Let's try and take another quick call here. Luann, I guess it is, calling in. Luann, you're on with Lisa. Go ahead.
Okay. I am just calling to thank you for being a disciple. I just think it's amazing that you're sharing your story. And I listened to you years ago when you talked about planting seeds for our children. And not digging in the dirt and trying to reroute the road.
And I looked over the edge of it and I saw dirt in a cup.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I've shared that many times with small groups that I've been in. And I have a lot of messes with my own children. But I feel like God has used them. Not only will he use them for their lives, but he's used them to heal me from things that happened to me in my life. He walked me through a son's addiction, and I feel like, I mean, he's still struggling, but I feel like in our family time, he took that addiction to take me to another place of healing, just to surrender what I had been through. Mm-hmm. And it was brought healing. I mean, we had to do resentments, regrets, reaffirmations, and I just think it took all of us to a place that we'll never forget. So in our messes, it's amazing what he does to heal the entire family.
Yeah, great testimony, great story, Luann, and so encouraging, I'm sure, to so many who are listening. The reality is that God loves the broken. He loves us so much that he is in mind that we will be redeemed. He doesn't leave us the way we are. He puts us back together in a different format, but he puts us back together to be oddly more useful after we've been broken. And that's the second thing, is he uses the broken. And the things that we think disqualify us when he redeems them can actually further qualify us. He doesn't leave us broken. I mean, that's the whole point of Jesus. You know, God uses broken things all through Scripture. You know, broken stone tablets to bring the Israelites back to himself, broken loaves to feed 5,000 plus people. Eventually, the broken body of his son. He was pierced for our iniquities. You know, he was wounded, broken blood vessels, for our transgressions. By his wounds, we are healed. He restores the broken.
You'll want to read the book, The Beauty of Broken. You'll read about the flower garden and the seeds, too, and realize, too, that, you know, our children, the seeds, the flowers don't necessarily grow in the same way that we thought they would.
Exactly. And what Luann was talking about is an illustration where I planted a Dixie cup garden as a kindergartner and punched my marigold seed down in the dirt. And I couldn't wait for it to grow. I was so frustrated. I begged my mom to let me dig it up. And she said, Elisa, seeds grow in the dark. In the dirt. If you dig them up, you'll interrupt the process. And that's the reality of every one of us in our families. It looks like just seeds in the muddy cup most of the time, but are we trusting God to do the growth? It happens in the dirt. It just does. That's where things grow.
All right, got about 3 minutes left or so. Talk a little bit about what you're working on now. You're working to help women invest their influence in God's purposes. What does that mean?
Right. Since leaving MOPS, and even there, MOPS is so much about leadership development for women. I mean, if you look around at the women who are making a difference in their communities and their places of work and, you know, with their homes, you're going to see MOPS leaders. And so I just had a passion to help women of any age and season understand their influence, recognize it, and then really develop it, maximize it. And so Fulfill, FULLFILL.org. is a free offering. It's a digizine. We have about 12 issues up online with videos and downloadable discussion questions. And there's a weekly refill that comes every week into your inbox if you sign up for that. It keeps you connected to who you are as a woman in Christ. It's all free. So just go take a look at fulfill.org. And as well, you can connect to where I'm speaking and the books we have in our Fulfill store there, and just resources to help you grow. We keep it free so that it's readily accessible to every woman in every country and every season as much as possible.
I was going to ask you, Lisa, wondering, in the midst of your challenging seasons, were there biographies or maybe biblical characters that spoke to you particularly, maybe just as a final word of encouragement?
You know, I've had mentors all through my life. I think about a group that we call ourselves a covenant group, and every single one of them is at least 10 years older than me. Well, one is about 5 years older, and I giggle because I think it took 8 women to mother me. I had an interesting natural mother, but it took 8 women to re-parent me. They were very influential, and I think leaning into mentors is so wise. We can know them well, or we can not know them at all. It can be somebody that we live alongside or somebody we watch in the pulpit or listen to on the radio or pick up a book and read. Don Miller's Blue Like Jazz was an encouragement. Brennan Manning was great. Richard Rohr has helped me much. Ann Voskamp has helped me. On and on. Those who are honest about their raw brokenness and how they discovered Jesus's healing power were very impactful for me.
Well, it's been an impactful hour, absolutely, no doubt about it, and so glad to be able to connect with Lisa Morgan again and talk about her latest book, The Beauty of Broken. The subtitle is My Story and Likely Yours, and appreciate the great encouragement that's come. We'll find out more about Lisa speaking and writing. The new ministry, fulfill.org, is where you can find it, fulfill.org. Lisa, blessings to you. Thanks so much for sharing in the book and with us today.
Oh, thank you, and praying much health and healing for all who are listening. You're not alone.
Well, you're listening to Connecting Faith. This is a program you'll want to share with a friend or someone that you know could really benefit from it. You can get the podcast and share it online by going to our website, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. One quick note before we go. Coming up Wednesday, a very special program, as we hear about the life and legacy of C.S. Lewis, Narnia and Beyond. It's a special production from Folks in the Family that'll be on Wednesday's Connecting Faith. And then Thursday, we'll talk gratitude with Nancy Lee DeMoss. I hope you'll come back and listen in for another Connecting Faith.
This has been the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. To hear more engaging discussions on the intersection of faith and life, head to myfaithradio.com and click Connecting Faith.